This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by the KTTH smartphone app. Text the keyword app, APP, to 1-800-465-8770. Text app to 1-800-465-8770. Let's find out what's trending.
What's trending at home?
The State Board of Health formally adopted a temporary ban on the sale of flavored vaping products amid concern over a lung illness that has sickened hundreds of people, even though the preliminary report suggests that these were actually black market products that were tampered and or abused. But let's not get facts in the way of a good sort of moral outrage. Hundreds of supporters of vaping packed the public hearing that happened yesterday afternoon in Seattle. Dozens of them testified against the order before the board, which didn't really care because they were always going to do what Governor Jay Inslee asked of them. They were always going to ban the products.
We say aye.
I are at risk, and you could care less. I hope Bloomberg paid you off in the head.
Business owners are upset because this can destroy their livelihoods. Vape users are upset because this can hurt their attempts to actually quit smoking.
Please understand that this isn't just about young people.
The scariest part of all this is the hundreds of customers that have told me that they will go back to cigarettes if this passes.
That's a significant concern, and that's the likelihood. People have chosen to take to vapor products, e-cigarettes, because it is safer than traditional cigarettes. Now, did you notice what I said there? Safer, not safe.
Ah.
Let the record show I said safer, not safe. Because folks want to pretend that people are saying it's safe to vape with an e-cigarette. No one's saying that. I've not heard anyone say that. It is safer. The nicotine is not the part of a cigarette that's going to give you cancer. It's the burning of the tobacco. Nicotine, of course, makes you more likely to become addicted to the cigarette, but it's not the nicotine that's making people sick. Lots of people who are trying to get off of tobacco smoke, they're turning to e-vaping, and they like the fact that they can have mango or mint-flavored or Captain Crunch-flavored e-juice. It makes it a little bit easier for them to get over the cravings that they might still have from the cigarettes that we don't want them smoking, and now we're telling them we're taking away all of those flavors except tobacco, which is weird to me. Which means they're likely going to go back to the traditional cigarette. People who were in support of the vaping community spoke. They said they came with facts. But the folks on the board, they didn't care.
We know more about this industry than they do. Look at two women that are about ready to lose everything that they have. Everything that they have, because people do not, I mean, we go through the due process. Isn't that what we're supposed to do? Are we not supposed to show up here and do this? Have we not been respectful? Have we not proven our points? Did we come here with just opinions, or did we come here with facts?
Do you think they just had their decision already made up?
Yes. 100%.
How could you have not had your decision made up? We brought nothing but facts.
He's 100% correct. Even if you might disagree with his position on this, this vote was never, ever, ever about the debate. They don't want the debate. When you have a governor who comes out and says categorically that the only reason companies like Juul put out flavored vaping pods is because they want to addict a 12-year-old, they're not counting on facts. They're counting on emotions and scare tactics. Secretary of Health John Wiseman explain why that they were in support. Why they were in support of the ban?
We're going in the wrong direction. This is a crisis. The state has been taking some actions along the way.
He doesn't have facts on his side, but he knows he can freak you all out. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending in Seattle?
So a few weeks after I called out Michael Warden, Seattle's traffic czar, the city announced that he's leaving. He does nothing. This is a dude who does absolutely nothing. Yet he makes $195,000 a year. Has the traffic in and around the Seattle area gotten better or worse? It's gotten kind of worse, right? Certainly not gotten better. He's supposed to do some work to help traffic. He didn't. And folks, not just me, others were asking questions, including the Seattle City Council.
Taxpayers are paying $195,000.
That doesn't mean work's not happening, but I am not aware of any of the work.
We want to know and have a sense of confidence that we're getting what we're paying for.
Like, that's kind of a concern. So here's how you know something's not right in the world. I agree with three progressive council members.
Ooh.
Let's say it this way, though. Make them feel bad instead of me. They agree with me.
Should I write this down that three progressive council members once agreed with Jason Rantz? Is there a book for that? Because that hasn't been done. There's no book ready to go.
Yeah, there's not a book for that one. We're just going to have to tweet it out at them.
Wow.
Tweet that out at them.
Okay.
Because this is how ridiculous it is. We have a traffic czar who was doing nothing. And when people took a look at his day-to-day operations, like I did, they sent me back a long statement from the Seattle Department of Transportation. And I posted it at KTTH.com. If you go there, you can see it. Just say, oh, you know, he does things. He's at work. Oh, yeah, what do they do? Yeah, well, he gets on the bus and he talks to people. What does he talk about? No, just their experiences and stuff. Does the guy who's a traffic czar have to do that? How does that make traffic better? Well, he's very hands-on. We're paying him $195,000. That's where, really? Because I will quit this job right now. I'll go onto a bus and just talk to people who are taking the bus all day.
You already do that.
I do that right now for free. I don't talk. I just silently judge them.
And then put it on your Instagram.
Yeah, that's true. So they're over at the mayor's office are kind of lying about why he's leaving. Their senior deputy mayor, Mike Fong, according to the Seattle Times, wrote that warden's role, quote, was established as a temporary position and that the worst case scenarios of the Seattle squeeze, quote, have not materialized. So they're saying, you know what? We're actually doing the efficient thing as far as finances go because we realized that the traffic wasn't as bad as we thought. And so we're actually saving money by not having Michael Warden continue in this role because he's not all that necessary. See, don't get mad at us for misspending. We're great stewards. We're responsible.
How noble of them.
So ridiculous. Traffic, by the way, is worse. Highway 99 tolling is about to happen in just a few weeks. We're expecting about 1,600 to 2,000, and that's a conservative estimate, of new cars getting off of Highway 99 and then back onto either I-5 or through surface streets. And you're telling me... that, oh, we haven't, all the worst case scenarios haven't materialized. Really? Really?
Yeah, when...
I mean, we're going to go with that. At some point, you think they got around a conference room, a mayor staff, and they were kind of throwing around ideas like, okay, how do we explain this? Someone stood up and made this suggestion, and immediately everyone laughed, right? Everyone said, okay, good. Good one, Stu. That's a really good on you. Oh man, you get a coffee. I'm going to Starbucks. I'm going to get you. I'm bringing you home a treat because that was the best belly laugh I had all day. And then all of a sudden, as the laughter starts to subside, Mayor Durkin, who's also laughing, she turns. Wait a minute, that's so crazy. I think it could actually work. And then they just committed to it. No one believes this. No one believes this. Because here's the deal, and this is the wonders of public disclosure requests. God, I love them because I get access to all of their emails. It takes a little bit of time sometimes, but you get the emails, and we put in an email request to get every single email that he sent to the mayor's office and vice versa, because I want to see what he's actually doing. And I don't want to just be sort of super specific. Like, give me his calendar for the... No, that doesn't mean anything. I want to see how many emails he sent. I want to see what was the content of those emails. I want to know when those emails were sent. Because here's the deal. I'm willing to bet I'm going to get virtually no emails. Do you know a lot of people in 2019 who work in any industry, let alone government bureaucracies, where there's not a rather substantial email chain?
Yeah, I mean...
How many emails did you send today?
Double digits, at least.
Yes, okay.
For sure, 100%.
And you're producing one show.
Yeah, a terrible show.
Okay, your name is attached to this show, man. Why are you downplaying it?
Sorry. Well, make it the Jason Rantz and Peyton and producer Peyton show.
No, people will get mad. They get mad because you sound like a 12-year-old.
No, that's my lovable charm.
It's neither lovable nor charming.
I make this show great. I made this show great again.
someone's going to attach that to your Twitter handle.
Ah.
And you're going to regret that, man. Because the Sounders fans, they hate me. They're going to start hating you, too.
I hope they don't, because I hate you. I'm with them. I hate you.
You're a jerk. Turn off your microphone. You're out. 1-800-465-8770. Text me on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. 1-800-465-8770. Send me your text messages on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. Don't forget, you can follow me on Instagram. Just fire up the Instagram app, search for the screen name Jason Rantz, go behind the scenes of the show. JasonRantz. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Stuck in traffic.
It is an infamous drive. Anyone going from Everett to Marysville on I-5, and finally we're told WashDOT has a fix for it, but I am skeptical. Joining me in studio is Chris Sullivan, the purveyor of choke points over at MyNorthWest.com. Okay, take us through just once more for the folks who don't have to drive that ever. And to be fair, I rarely have to, but when I drive it, it's the worst.
Okay, it is a very, very bad choke point. It's one of the worst congested spots in the region. Basically, every afternoon, I-5 northbound between basically the Everett Mall all the way up almost to the Tulalip Outlet Mall past Marysville is bumper to bumper starting at about 2:30 in the afternoon. One, we have the Boeing employees getting out of the mm-hmm. Boeing shift there. Plus, we have a bunch of people who have moved to Arlington and to Everett and to Lake Stevens. And so every afternoon it backs up. But what's weird about this particular spot is you could go there on a Sunday afternoon.
It's still bad.
And it's backed up for 4 or 5 miles for no apparent reason. And it's just because there's a lot of weaving and merging there with because Highway 2 comes on, mm-hmm. plus the downtown Everett exits, and then you have the people weaving and merging getting on in Marysville. So it's just a very frustrating drive. And for the last couple of years, I've been talking to the state about what they're going to do with it. And they had told me originally the plan was to put shoulder driving in there like we have on 405 northbound mm-hmm. Out of Bothell, where you can, you know, during the peak use, you know, they'll let you know if the lane's open and you can drive on the shoulder to get by that. But apparently after talking to everybody involved, they've decided that they are going to put in an HOV lane. Right now, the HOV lane on northbound I-5 ends right in the middle of Everett there. So right after Highway 2 peels off, the exemption for HOV stops. It just becomes a general purpose lane. So what they're going to do is they're going to extend that HOV lane from there all the way up to Marysville.
Why not just make it a general purpose lane? I don't understand how the HOV lane extension is going to dramatic, because traffic is bad, including in the portion of the spot that you've got the HOV lane.
Correct.
Now, I'm presuming they're saying because you're merging on or something. Like, no.
There's a lot. There's a combination of that, but also there's a little bit more palatability from local leaders that if you're adding a high occupancy vehicle lane as opposed to a GP lane, that kind of fits the scenario of what people are trying to do.
Because they want to get you out of your car. And that, so they're not actually helping people who are stuck in their car, because there are a lot of people who have to drive solo. They just don't have the option.
That is true. But the thing that they're doing here, in some cases, you know, we would go, oh, well, they'll take the HOV lane and extend it. And that would mean we're getting rid of a general purpose lane. Because what happens right as we get past that little area downtown Everett, right by Marine View Drive, mm-hmm. it goes to just three lanes northbound. So I was thinking, oh my gosh, we're going to extend that HOV lane. It's going to become HOV and then 2GP, and people would really kind of get hosed. No, what they're going to do, they're actually widening the freeway. So there will continue to be three general purpose lanes going north, and then this additional lane will be the expansion of the HOV. So at least there's going to be more capacity. And I know it may not help everybody, but anything that they can do to add capacity there is helpful, will be helpful.
Remember, Lynn, what was her last?
Peterson.
Lynn Peterson, former WashDOT director after the Republicans fired her in the most amazing, spectacular way ever. Remember, she used to say, you can't build your way out of congestion. You can't. We're not adding any lanes. We're not making anything wide. And then even at the time, we're like, you're kind of doing that in Bellevue. You're kind of doing it in JBLM.
Yeah.
To go, like, what do you mean you can't build your... So have they abandoned that idea?
No, that's still kind of the overall mantra.
They're still pretending?
Is that you can't build your way out.
Well,
but
what they mean is, by the way, is we don't want to. Which is a valid... Okay, you can make a valid argument for that. But we say, oh, you can't. Well, no, you can. You just choose not to because it doesn't fit your political
your
agenda.
Your worldview. And what's also here is that in a lot of cases, we don't actually have room to add lanes. Like, I mean, it's not like we're Arizona where you can just kind of build mm-hmm. out. Here we've got lakes and bridges and, you know, all sorts of topography
we
that get in our
here.
Way. But there's room on this area.
Yeah.
through the flats, working your way there across EB Island and other places and the sloughs, and so working your way into Marysville. So I think it will help. Timeline is 2021 is when construction will begin. 2022 is when it's going to be finished. They coincided this with the construction of the new 529 interchange.
They
there
say
at
it'll only take a year. Ish.
Correct.
So that's not true.
Well, if you think about it,
have they ever done anything in a year?
Well, yes.
These kinds of projects?
Well, they did the widening of 405 to add that shoulder driving in a pretty fast pace. And let's think about it. They're only extending
a little. Shoulder driving is much different than
building up the.
Yeah, I mean,
but the thing is that, I mean, if you look at the pictures at mynorthwest.com that I took yesterday, there is a lot of room where they have a left breakdown lane and a right breakdown lane, and where a lot of this room is going to be made up. Let me play for you a little sound I got from a Chris Olson from the Department of Transportation, that in order to make this happening, the widening is going to be pretty minimal.
To accomplish that, what we're going to have to do is just a little bit of lane shifting and reduce the other lanes down to from 12 feet to 11 feet. We have a lot of 11-foot lanes around the state, so that's not all that uncommon. Our left shoulder will be reduced to about 2 feet. We will still have a 10-foot shoulder on the right-hand side.
So they're basically using
shoulder for?
Well, just to give you just the slightest bit of room, also to give you a little bit of place for debris to get pushed off to, literally. But so they've got a little bit of room.
They call it a shoulder. They don't meet it in a traditional shoulder.
Correct.
You're not pulling over if you... Yeah.
Right, but you could in certain places right now to the left or to the right if you got in trouble there. Now it'll just be on the right-hand side. So they're kind of squeezing. A lot of people are concerned about going down to 11-foot lanes. Not that that's unusual, as Chris Olson mentioned, it happens, but there's one little spot there right at the beginning of this where you go down the hill over the Snohomish River through an S-curve that's a downgrade with an S in the middle. I'm like, okay, 11-foot lanes there with trucks going through. People are just going to have to get used to it. They don't have as much wiggle room there. That'll be interesting. I know it's an HOV lane. It's not GP. I would like to see a GP there. I think it would help more people. But this commute is so bad during any time of the day or night and so randomly. I'm just happy they're adding a little capacity
there. But do they have any of the data to suggest that there are more people who would benefit from an HOV lane, or is this they want it to manifest that way?
Well, I think that
this is aspirational.
I don't have the actual data myself on that for the traffic counts from what they would say. However, I would say that there are enough people who work shifts at Boeing that might be able to team up now that may not before. Mm-hmm. So there's option there. Transit, they're adding more transit, like a bus service and whatnot, because more and more people are moving up there. So, I mean, it could provide a better traffic for options for people to use transit. It maybe if they're going into Everett.
Light rail at some point.
Well, light rail will only get
role.
You to Everett, right? But you would be able to catch maybe something that would get you into Everett. So I understand it. I don't have the numbers to see what they're looking at, but they said it's cheaper than some of the other options, and it was the best option that they could come up with. And the fact that they're adding capacity in any way, shape,
you
or form is
too
great.
Easy.
Trust
settle
me,
too easy.
Considering
I get
we get
it,
nothing, considering we don't get anything most of the time, even to get something, I think
but
it's helpful.
Does that piss you off?
It
just
does.
As a taxpayer and a driver. It's like you expect that they won't hear you at all, that they'll completely ignore you. Then they give you some crumbs. And you're like, well, I guess I should be happy. They want you to be happy with the crumbs. And I would rather say, no, stop ignoring us. Let's do some things that are going to help the most amount of people, not just the people that you maybe ideologically or from a worldview perspective agree with.
Yeah,
that's all I'm saying.
I totally get it. But when you've been starving for so long, sometimes crumbs taste good.
You're not starving.
That is true. But you know what I mean? Starving for infrastructure.
2022 to end this is not going to happen. This is Jason Tells the Future. I'm telling you right now on October 10th that 2022 is not going to happen. It'll be probably 2024.
Well,
just add 2 years to every... And by the way, I don't even think it'll start in 2021.
Well, that's the plan that we have right now.
That's the plan. I don't think it's going to happen.
And if you want to add something to this and say, oh, is this going to fix the problem? The answer is really no. What would fix the problem overall would be a mega project that we have to do at some point, which is reconstruct the entire Highway 2 I-5 interchange because of the volume. They're going to build another Highway 2 bridge.
Exits on Everett?
It's just really bizarre. Exactly. So there's so much weaving and merging there that they need to get rid of. That will, I think, maybe hopefully help maybe solve, me in air quotes, solve the congestion issue. This is a Band-Aid, but it's at least they're doing something.
And by the way, as much as I love cops and Washington State Troopers, this spot along Everett is, oh, they've got all the speed cameras out there. They've got, and I'm wondering if that's making it worse. Because people, when they see cops out there and they've got the speed gun out there, like, you're going to go slower than you should be. You're not going to go to 60 or 65. You're going to go to 50 or 55. And that just causes just a domino effect of slowness.
Well, I mean, anytime you do enforcement on our roads, they're so full. I mean, a traffic stop then becomes a disabled, basically becomes a vehicle on the shoulder.
It's always on I-5 north and south in Everett, right around the downtown exit. It's always there.
Yeah. But I mean, I would love, but I think enforcement is helpful. But especially
not
during
this case.
In peak hours, an enforcement stop turns into a traffic disruption. That, I mean, that's one of the problems that the State Patrol will admit to. I mean, they could sit out there all day long and write HOV violations, speeding violations, left lane camping violations. But they know that in the morning and the afternoon commute, if they pull somebody over, they're probably blocking a lane or a shoulder to make that happen because there just aren't a lot of places to pull over.
Well, let's just pretend this is all good news.
Okay,
you're putting me in a bad mood now.
Well, I'm trying to think of it. I look at everything as a glass half full. Okay, that's not true.
That's
more half empty.
That's not true at all.
But in this case, it's glass half full. They're doing something.
It's glass a quarter full.
It's better than empty.
Fine. Okay. If you're really thirsty, you know what? If you're really thirsty, fine.
I like crumbs and half-empty glasses.
That's Chris Sullivan, who likes crumbs and half-empty glasses and trying to solve traffic problems. You can get more information on our sister website, mynorthwest.com/chokepoints. Chris Sullivan from our sister station.
Olympia, Sammamish, Lakewood, Bellevue.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Ranch Show.
Bellingham, Kirkland, Z-Town.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Hey, look at the time, 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. It means it's time for the Big Local, brought to you by Sean Keller, Smiles by Design. The concept, very simple. The media here is hyper-focused on the city of Seattle. They end up ignoring some really important stories in the neighborhoods and communities you live in. So we do the opposite. We ignore Seattle, and we spend our time focused on you. And we start this afternoon in Island County, where the Washington State GOP Chairman Caleb Heimlich is calling out Island County Commissioner Helen Price Johnson for refusing to recuse herself from the 10th Legislative District Senate seat appointment. Helen Price Johnson is running for that seat as a Democrat against an opponent that she might actually help pick out. That seems problematic. Joining me on the line live with his reaction is the pride of Puyallup, Caleb Heimlich. Caleb, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Jason.
Okay, so this is kind of crazy. Take us through exactly what's happening in the 10th.
Yeah, so obviously I think I was on your show about a month ago when Senator Barbara Bailey announced that she was resigning. So she has resigned. That means there's a vacancy. Following the state constitution, we had a meeting that I chaired with local people from the three counties up there, Skagit, Snohomish, and Island, where the precinct committee officers voted and selected three Republicans to put forward for appointment. And the people who make that appointment are actually the county commissioners, which Helen Price Johnson is one of them. And so we submitted the three names, and there was an article in the Everett Herald about the upcoming meeting. That meeting is next Friday, October 18th, where there's three county commissioners in Island, three in Skagit, and then five county council members in Snohomish. So those 11 people will be voting on who will be the next state senator. That state senator will be a Republican.
Mm-hmm.
And Helen Price Johnson, the Island County Commissioner, who is a Democrat, has already announced that she is running for that seat. So in a sense, she is one of the votes. And at this point, until she recuses herself, is picking who her opponent will be, which, as we're pointing out, that's corrupt. That's not right. Yeah. The honorable thing to do is just recuse yourself, let the process play out. She had announced for the seat a couple months ago. She's already raised $40,000. It's pretty tone deaf. And just not appropriate for her to participate in this process, for her to vote for somebody. Because either you look at it one of two ways. One, she's picking the weakest candidate who she thinks she can beat. Or I guess two, you could say by voting for that candidate, she's saying, hey, that person's going to be a good state senator. So why is she running against that person then? And so I think the right thing to do is just to recuse yourself and allow the process to go through without kind of this cloud of darkness.
Yeah, and as of just a few days ago in the Herald, she's quoted as saying the job of the commissioners is to pick a good senator for the 2020 session. I think the best qualified person should be chosen. So she's kind of, it is kind of weird, kind of the talking point that she's putting out there. Now, to be fair, I think assuming she continues to stay the course and votes in a way that's clear conflict of interest, why not just use that quote against her? To say, hey, you've already, yeah. why are you running against a person that you acknowledge would be the best choice for the district?
That's absolutely right, and we will certainly do that. And I think the reality here is if this was a Republican, I would advise them to, look, do the right thing. Just remove yourself from the process. There's 11 of you involved, so there will still be 10 people making the right decision. But I think for our process, for following the state constitution, for just the appearance of impropriety, it doesn't pass the smell test that you're in there voting on who your opponent will be. And so I think she owes that to the people of Island County and the people of the 10th Legislative District to let the process play out in a fair way, and she should recuse herself.
So there are three Republicans to choose from: Sarah Hyatt, Ron Muzzle, and Christine Cribb. Do you think any of those that ends up getting selected, do you think they would have a hard time beating Helen Price Johnson?
It will be a challenging seat, no question. I mean, the 10th is one where we lost a state House seat. It was Dave Hayes. He lost by, I think, about 500 votes in 2018. So as part of the meeting that I was chairing, as the PCOs were deliberating and listening to the speeches, a big part of this is we wanted to put forward three really strong candidates, and we have done that. Each of these individuals, Ron Mazzal, Christine Cribb, and Sarah Hyatt, have been very involved in the community, very strong credentials, very strong background in understanding what that district needs in their representation down in Olympia, and I think they will, whoever is selected, will run a strong campaign, and we will do everything we can to make sure we keep that seat. It will probably be one of the two or three main legislative races in 2020, so it's a big deal. It's going to be a competitive race, but I'm confident we can hold that seat. I think given what is going on in Seattle, what the Democrats did in Olympia in raising all these taxes under the cloud of darkness, that is not what the voters of the 10th Legislative District want, so it's a clear choice between the three individuals that the Republican Party is putting forward, and Helen Price Johnson has a record on the Island County Commission of voting for higher taxes and things like that. So we're going to run a very clean campaign, but focus on those issues and present that clear choice. And I'm confident we can come out on top next year.
And remember, folks, the clear choice is going to be a Republican and a Democrat who decided to stay in a position where there's a clear conflict of interest, trying to choose who she runs against and has no problems with that conflict, which tells you a lot about her character and how she would operate if she was actually put in a position of power in Olympia. We've been talking with Caleb Heimlich. He is the Washington State GOP chairman. Caleb, my friend, thank you so much for stopping by. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Jason.
Absolutely. You're listening to the Jason Rancher, 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text message on the None Better Tax Resolution hotline. Meanwhile, a man and his six-year-old daughter were spending some time together at Mercerdale Park on Mercer Island, and they came across something that, as a Jew, you especially don't want to come across, a swastika. A swastika painted on a concrete riser. And what made it even more painful for this family is they found it on the first day of the Jewish New Year, Rosh Hashanah. Kudos, by the way, to the Mercer Island Parks Department, because apparently, according to the Mercer Island Reporter, which is where we found the story, they cleaned up the swastika within minutes of finding out about it. But the problem is, and maybe more alarming, more swastikas were apparently then found somewhere along Flurry Trail. Now, there are no suspects in any of this. We don't know if it's many people. We don't know if it's one person. We do know that it's happening at a time in this country and in this region in which anti-Semitism is on the rise. Now, when I see stories like this, I do like to point out that these are most likely done by a small group of individuals, if not one individual. And when stories like this are published, whether it's in Mercer Island or Woodinville, we did the story there a couple months ago about the swastika, what ends up happening? The community comes together. The community stands up and says, we don't want this in our neighborhood. We will not accept this in our neighborhood. We do not want to be represented by this level of hate. And I try to focus my attention on that. Not on the hate. I'm not going to give them power over me. I'm not going to give them power over me as a Jew, as a Washingtonian. These hateful bigots do not get to decide whether or not I'm going to feel comfortable in my own home. And so I love when so many people come together, as they did in Woodinville, as they did earlier on this year on Mercer Island. We're all going to say, no, you don't represent us. But I will point out, again, in this region, as we see more anti-Semitism, I know a lot of folks want to immediately point fingers at alt-right groups, conservative fringe groups, which there's no doubt they exist, and they're bigoted. But let's also talk about the normalization of anti-Semitism from the progressives. Progressives aren't putting swastikas anywhere, as far as I know. But what they do is delegitimize Israel. What they do is push disturbing stereotypes and caricatures of Jews. What they do is forward conspiracy theories that are anti-Semitic. And that's happening along with this increase in anti-Semitism. So I want to just remind people that that's happening at the same time that more and more voices on the left, whether we're talking about locally or nationally, are taking virulently anti-Semitic positions, pretending that it's not anti-Semitic. Just throwing that out there. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. Really do appreciate all the texts coming in. To the Jason Rantz Show, live in the Online Trading Academy studio. Really do appreciate you tuning in today. Really do appreciate you subscribing to the podcast. I met a listener in the building today. He was here for our sister station. And when I walked by him in the lobby, he gave me that look that I realized a little bit too late into me wandering by that he was a fan, like the look of, oh, that's Jason Rantz. And I didn't want to stop and then introduce myself with, you know, because maybe I misread the actual look, but I'm pretty good at it. So I walk by, I go into my office. He's going on a tour about an hour later. He was here for an in-studio thing. And then they walk by me and he introduces himself. He goes, oh, it's Jason. Big Bill, you're so amazing. I love you. And he goes, you know, it's harder to listen to you since you left nights on the other station I used to be on. And you know what I did? I yelled at him.
Why'd you yell?
I shamed him.
You can't yell at fans.
I yelled at him for not listening. And then you know what he says? He goes, is it better if I tell you? Because I do subscribe to the podcast. And then immediately I said, oh, okay, you can be a fan again. That's okay.
Did he ask about me?
He has no idea who you are.
Ah, great.
No one ever asks about you. But the good news is he listens on the podcast because he's not always able to catch the full 3-hour show. And that's okay. It's selfish if you don't listen to the full 3 hours. And a way to get around that selfish decision, because it's not like I'm asking you for much. I'm asking you literally 15 hours a week. That's not that much.
Yeah.
I do 15 hours for you. You can't pay me back and give me the same and then go to all of our sponsors. Text the keyword podcast to the number 1-800-465-8770. I'll send you a link to my podcast, become a subscriber, and catch up on everything that you miss.
And our listeners need to know how much work you put into these podcasts each week, Jason, because you know you're working these extra hours, mm-hmm. you're publishing them, you're editing them, yeah. you're making sure that they are perfect, and all yep. of our listeners need to know how much energy you go after the show putting these on the podcast.
Beyond that, what they should also know is how I get no help from my producer.
Yeah, they should
he just
know that.
He leaves the end of the day. He just leaves. I thought it was supposed to be his job. That's what we pay him for.
6 o'clock and I'm out.
He's just out.
Oh,
and man. You know what the problem is? If I did have him do the job, he would then get on air and say something passive-aggressive like, oh, you make me do the job that I agreed to do for the wage that I agreed. Like, and it would just be a nightmare. So I just kick him out and I do it myself.
Yeah, no. Having a passive-aggressive producer would be the worst thing that you could ever bring onto yourself.
Yeah, I know.
So
text keyword podcast to 1-800-465-8770. There's an interesting story out of Pierce County where a doctor is suing Kaiser Permanente after they fired her. She said she was fired as a result of bad reviews that she ended up getting from some patients who were essentially mad that she wasn't over-prescribing painkillers in their cases. At least that's how she viewed it. And I think it's a fascinating case, regardless of the merits of the lawsuit, because I don't know. Tacoma News Tribune says Dr. Erin Alpert worked for Kaiser from 2012 through 2017. She's fired in connection with a critique of the company's patient evaluation system, this according to the lawsuit. They say in the lawsuit, quote, Kaiser's management denied Dr. Alpert's shareholder status, at least in part, on the basis of financial concerns that advancing Dr. Alpert would result in reduced revenues and that other physicians would follow her example and refuse to prescribe or provide medications that were not medically indicated, further reducing the profitability of Kaiser's business operations in the Northwest region. Now, spokesperson for Kaiser, they have a policy like most companies that say, look, we can't comment on ongoing litigation. So just to put that out there just so you know some of the basics of the case. I have no idea who's telling the truth. But when we push that aside, there's actually a really interesting issue that this case brings to our attentions, or at least it should. Patients who are in pain, the ones who go to the doctor's office, let's say they've got a backache that just won't go away and it hurts them a lot. They show up and they want immediate relief. That's why we go to a doctor. Immediate relief. Don't just treat the underlying symptoms. I need you right now to make it so it doesn't hurt so much I want to cry when I move, because that's how bad the pain in my back is. And that sometimes means there is this expectation that you are going to get a painkiller to immediately deal with that pain. But a doctor who knows better might not give you any at all. Or maybe they'll give you 3 pills. Or 6 pills, but not that much, because they know how addictive it can be. And they know that just simply giving you this pill isn't necessarily going to treat the underlying problem that's causing that back pain. So they say, no, you know what? Here's what we're going to have you do instead. And they'll tell you what to do. Maybe it's stretching. Maybe it's something else. Ice, heat, whatever it is. You go home. You don't get the pills that you thought you were going to. Not because, again, you know, no nefarious intent of wanting to abuse opioids, but because you're in significant pain. You go home, and what happens usually within a day or two, depending on where you go to the doctor. This happens with me at the polyclinic, usually within a day or two. I get an email that asks me to review the service that I just got from my doctor. Sometimes it's a letter that I get asking me to fill out a form, just a survey. They say, hey, did you like Dr. So-and-so? Did they make you wait too long in the lobby? Did you feel like you were heard? Did you resolve whatever issue that maybe needed to resolve? And this is just going by memory. I don't remember the exact questions. But we have a lot of medical facilities out there that do this. And if you're that person who said, man, my back still hurts, you're going to give that doctor a bad review. I went in, I expected this kind of service, which would have included more oxycodone for my back pain. They didn't give it to me. Boo. 1 star. Then they go on Yelp and they do the same thing. And at some point, the doctor might feel pressured into ignoring their medical wisdom and giving in to your demands that you get some pill. And then all of a sudden you do become addicted, and then they lose that battle as well. It is a tricky situation. And I think this case, regardless of the specific details, brings up that bigger issue with all of us. 1-800-465-8770. Send me a text on the NumBetter Tax Resolution Hotline.